Parkcast, the UK's original theme park podcast.
Welcome back to Parkcast, park fans. You know by now, we are a podcast for theme park fans. I'm Bex. I'm usually with Kev, but he is still under a sea of boxes. He's in the middle of moving house, so he can't be with us this week. But don't worry, I've got not one, but two replacements. The first, someone you'll already know. He was on the podcast just before Christmas. We were having a good old chat about Merlin. It's Kip Hakes.
Hello.
He's back.
Yes, I'm back. Sorry about that.
No, you're very welcome. I think we posted a lot of stuff that we talked about on that episode out onto the internet, into the TikTok world, and you went a little bit viral.
But it's
all good. So it's lovely to have you back.
Thank you.
Talking about some theme park stuff. Did you have a lovely Christmas?
I did actually, although I did spend a lot of it just holed up in my studio making videos because I'm going away on holiday soon and I wanted content to go out while I was away on holiday. So instead of having a holiday at Christmas, I'm going to have a holiday in a few weeks' time.
And just dropping that in there, just casually. By the way, guys, I am going on holiday.
Yeah, where going to New York.
Oh, the dream.
I know. And I'm going to go on some rides there. I'm going to go to Nickelodeon World, which is just outside of New York, and get some creds. It's like in the American Dream Mall. It's a theme park in a mall, of course. And I'm looking forward to getting some more creds while I'm there.
Are you not going to Coney Island?
I think it's shut at this time of year. It's not open yet. I don't think it opens till March. I've been there once and
you just gonna have to
loved
go back.
It. Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, I bet this is going to be my seventh trip there. So going back's inevitable.
Wow. Never been to New York. Going at Christmas is on my bucket list for some point in the next few years.
Should do it.
But yeah, how exciting. So Kip's with us. And we're also joined today. Our special guest is someone who you may not have heard of, but you've definitely heard of, if that makes any sense. As theme park fans, we know part of the whole experience for us in these parks is getting immersed into them. And one of the things that really does that and helps that is the music that we hear in the parks. And we've got with us today someone who has brought us a lot of that music. His name's Glenn Robertson. He's also known as the Notable Stranger, and he's also known as the guy who's done the Icon theme, the Big One theme, the Valhalla theme. You'll have heard his stuff. Glenn, welcome to Parkcast.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Now, just for some context, you're not in the UK at the moment. You live over in Germany.
Yeah, southern Germany, near Nuremberg.
How exciting.
Amazing.
That's not a German native accent, though, is it?
No, Preston, born and bred. Allegedly, you're meant to lose your accent if you move away, and it doesn't seem to have drifted at all, sadly.
You've probably got a job which a lot of theme park fans dream of because you're working with parks really closely, and you're a composer, not just of theme park stuff, but you do theme park stuff, and that's what we as theme park fans will know you as. Is music something that was always sort of in your bones, in your blood?
Yeah, I would say it was. I mean, when I was a kid, my parents always wondered why all I ever wanted for Christmas was whatever the latest ABBA album was, which was I got a bike and everything else, but my main want was ABBA albums, and it's the structure of each song fascinated me as a kid, and the weird sounds, which I now know are synthesizers, but my cheap little Casio organ didn't do the same things that Benny's £100,000 GX1 did, so it was a bit. It took me a bit to work out that there was these things called synthesizers. Then I got into electronic music like Jean-Michel Jarre and Vangelis and Tangerine Dream, and so yeah, it kind of. I did have keyboard lessons because we didn't have a piano when I was a kid, so I had keyboard lessons on the same Casio keyboard, but it was. I was learning to play Eleanor Rigby and things like that, and it just didn't interest me. So I had very basic instruction and never did a graded exam. So I'm not a graded piano player or anything like that, but I've been doing it now long enough that I kind of know, I kind of understand how they work.
Are you kind of self-taught in a way then?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah. I mean, I know. Obviously, I've met session musicians over the years who are concert pianists and things like that, and they always kind of question how I write stuff because they would, if I were playing a melody and the certain chords with it, technically it shouldn't go with it or things like that, and but it sounds right, and they always said their training would say no, that's wrong, and so you kind of come at it from a different angle, and so you're not following the rules that were almost beaten into you as a child or when you went to music college or anything else. So yeah, it's melody is king for me, always has been, and arrangement is second, but it's you've got to have something that you can hum, and that's the key to me.
Yeah.
Are you musical, Kip?
That did sort of remind me when I was younger, we did have a piano because my uncle is he plays the organ and he is like God tier, literally, a pianist, and he's incredible. And so essentially we had a free piano teacher, and one of my biggest regrets in life is just not actually practicing and not taking advantage of this. And yeah, so I just used to sit at the piano and cry because I was forced to learn and do
These
and do it.
scales.
Yeah, exactly. And it was, and I'm so annoyed with myself that I gave up on it because I love music, and it's, and I really like the sort of creative side of things because, you know, I create stuff. And yeah, I'm really annoyed with myself that piano just sat there gathering dust in the end. Because I was just a child who was just lazy, and now I'm an adult that's lazy.
And also the stuff you had to play. I had piano lessons, and it was because it was all classical stuff, in to do your grades, it was classical. I know they started bringing out like jazz grades, which I started doing as well, but it wasn't like you weren't playing stuff that you knew that was
Yes.
cool. So I think
Yeah.
that made it more difficult.
Yeah.
I remember he once he wrote out on manuscript himself, popcorn. Hot butter, dun 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 dun, just to try and get me to be remotely interested in it. But yeah, most of the stuff he had was the Beatles standards and I Did It My Way and things like that. And to a 10-year-old kid, well, I never heard of Arthur songs,
Yeah.
and he always said, learn the standards and you'll never be out of work. And like, I'll get another job then, thanks.
Well, even if you didn't do that, it's obviously worked out pretty well for you because you now do make your living from playing music, composing music, putting music together. Like I said, we as theme park fans will know your work because we've been to Blackpool Pleasure Beach, apart from Kip, who's never been to Blackpool Pleasure Beach, which I only found out last week.
I've been near it. I've been near it. It was
But
closed. It was shut. I went in December one year and it was shut. And it is like navigating to the end of the world to there from Essex, but I do want to go. I really want to go with someone who like knows it and can sort of guide me round
let's
because
make it happen.
I think that might have to be an episode.
We'll do that. We'll do Kip's first time at Blackpool, and what a treat he'll be in for on some of those
But I
attractions.
have heard the music because I'm that much of a nerd that I listen to ride music.
Your Spotify Unwrapped
Yes.
2024 is up there.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so obviously you've got involved with Blackpool Pleasure Beach. Before we start going through the music that you created for them, how did that actually happen? Because I kind of feel like Amanda Thompson is not an easy woman to get into her inner circle and to be allowed into to be charged with something as important as creating music for her attractions and her rides. How did you get into that?
Yeah, I mean, I literally fell into it completely by accident. I've been a composer for a long time now. It's a significant birthday today, but I'm not going to say what it
Oh,
is.
happy
Yeah,
birthday.
happy birthday.
What better way to spend your birthday than with
Yeah, I
two
wouldn't be doing
complete
anything.
strangers?
Yeah, I would be sat here whether you were here or not. So, yeah.
Some
So,
less
yeah.
notable strangers.
Yeah, so I've been doing it a long time, and it's one of those things. It's word of mouth and friends of friends. My wife worked there 20 plus years ago, and she left and stayed in touch with Mans, and about 12 years ago, something like that, 10, 12 years ago, she was short of a song for Hot Ice, and phoned Michelle and said, can Glenn just do me a song for Hot Ice, please?
Just knock one up quickly.
Yeah, well, yeah, because do it. And I thought, yeah, why not? It's a challenge. I'd see, obviously seen Hot Ice lots of times. And weirdly, when I was a kid, I was in Preston, like I said, and we go to see Hot Ice at least once a year.
Oh,
And
wow.
it was Las Vegas, Hollywood, everything else you want to call it. It was showbiz. To me,
Yeah.
it was, in the 80s in Preston, you didn't get to see big things like that. And so it always had a little place in my heart, because it was always something you'd go and see if you lived locally. And so I said, yeah, why not? And I did it. And the next year, she wanted a few more, and then the next year I seem to be doing all of them, and then she so it was the opening night of one of the Hot Ice songs, what, Hot Ice Night, sorry. And she said, she sidled up to me and said, in a very hushed tone, because it was top secret, that they were doing a ride, and can you do the ride music for it? And I went, okay, I've said yes, and then I said yes, and then worried about it, and I had no
We've
idea.
all
I
been
had
there.
never turned anything down, and I had genuinely no idea what to do. So I asked a few course the nerds, and they said, oh, you need to do this. So I actually went to Europa Park, because it's not near me at all, but it's not, if
It's the
you're
same
gonna,
country.
yeah, well, yeah, it's a very big country. And so I went there and kind of just saw what you meant to do, kind of thing. And the different rides had such different music. I kind of thought, right, this is you can more or less do what you want. There's no formula, so I treated it. Mans also, in further conversations, she gave me this absolutely brilliant synopsis of what the ride is to her, and what she wanted to convey in the music. So I'll abbreviate it, because it was a brilliantly detailed conversation, and she just didn't even take breath, and it's all in her head what she wanted. So the kind of brief was that it opens in a apple blossom, an orchard with all apple blossom gently billowing about, and all very calm and tranquil. And then it's on the side of the sea, and out to sea, this 1,000-foot tidal wave is heading towards the shore, and it crashes down, everything goes everywhere, and then there's a moment of calm, and then a giant hole opens up in the ground, and everything drains into the ground, and a giant sword or something comes down from the sky and descends into the ground as well. And then there's again a moment of calm, and then a giant serpent rises out of the hole and is writhing and twisting and things like that, and that's the ride. And so
Wow.
that took about half an hour, but that's the very basic
That's fascinating,
synopsis.
though. Obviously, as an enthusiast and someone who's ridden the ride, I was there on the ride opening day. I went to like the VIP launch of the opening day, or one of the first people on this ride. So I've been riding it for as long as you can be riding it. I've never heard that level of detail about Icon.
No.
Ever. Like that was in her head. Like, obviously you ride the ride and you get the kind of Japanese feeling around it. There's some cherry blossom theming. A lot of the merchandise has got that on. But to hear that that was all going on in her head, that was how she saw the
Wow.
ride. That's fascinating.
Yeah, that's
Yeah,
mad.
she's absolutely brilliant at conveying what's in her head. Her ideas are, I mean, it's when I'm doing the music, when we have the music for Hot Ice, there's 1,000 ideas just coming out at any one minute, and I'm previously writing and trying to keep up, and it's just and she knows if she says something, and she'll know some artist or some dance like a ballet or something that she wants to take inspiration from. She'll know it, and has probably seen it as well. And so it's like a creative Wikipedia that they can just go into, and she'll go bang 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 bang, and it's from my point of view, it's brilliant, because I you know, you get briefs all the time, and it's like, oh, can you make it blue? And you're like,
Yeah.
okay, what? Or something
What
like
does
that,
blue
soft
sound?
but hard, and you're like, oh God. And then Mans comes along with this like train of consciousness, and you say, oh, this is brilliant. So I now the mindset I use when I'm doing them is I'm a big fan of prog rock from the 70s, the concept album, the War of the Worlds, and any album that has like a story to it and there's a continuous thing. So I just treat them as concept albums that you can kind of do what you want, and just have you can yeah the average about 30 odd minutes. So the yeah I treat them as a story and a concept album, and as long as you don't go far left field and keep it mainstream-ish, then it's brilliant, because it just frees your mind. You can't so many restrictions you can do in my normal musical work, that you're doing corporate stuff or songs, and there's only so much you can do in 3 minutes in a pop song, and you can't, it has to have a start and a verse and a chorus, and you can't really deviate from that. But these, oh God, you can just go mad in a creative way, and it's absolutely, I mean, when I finished Icon, I've never done anything that length before, or that with that kind of structure and complexity, and I genuinely feel it's in my top three best things I have ever done. It's
Wow.
I was actually I was listening, I was on the plane the other day, and it came up in my Spotify random thing, and I thought, oh, should I listen to it? And I thought, yeah, well, I haven't heard it for ages. And I mean, obviously you hear all the things that you should have changed and everything else, but apart from that, I genuinely enjoyed it, and I was surprised by bits of it. I think, oh yeah, I forgot that bit. Oh, that, you know, you started going, that's clever, I like
He's
that.
good,
Who
he
came
is.
up with
He's good.
that? So yeah, it's Icon. I genuinely love.
How long is like a theme park music track? You know, how do they say we need it to be 15 minutes? Can it be 20 minutes? Does it have to be a lot shorter? Because I suppose people don't always necessarily sort of hear the whole thing unless they're a nerd and do that. So yeah, what's the sort of brief for timings and things like that?
I haven't had any, to be
Oh,
honest.
okay.
Icon was done as one piece, and then it was decided that there should be an ambient version for the queue line, and then a tension one for the station, and then a kind of euphoric one for the exit and the shop. So the main theme was then edited down and changed to fix the various ones. My favorite one of those is the ambient one, because again, follows the style and the timings of Icon, but you could just mess around and do like a brilliant ambient track. So, but the longer, kind of, I think the longer you do it, the longer the loop is. So people who are stood in the queue then don't start hearing the same thing. I think, hang on, that's only 3 minutes long or whatever. So I tended to just overdo it, just because I can hear loops and stuff all the time, so it annoys me. So I love doing it. It was like the ambient one, it just kept going and going and going. I thought, brilliant, you know, there's massive reverbs everywhere and panning about, even though it's in mono. When it's on the when you hear it in the queue line, it's in mono. So that was a lesson learned, that these beautiful pans left and right don't really work in a station or whatever. But yeah, and my son listens to on his Spotify list, on his Christmas, you know, when it does the summary, the anticipation icon, I think it's called, the one that's played in the station, was
Yeah.
in his top 10 played songs. And I said, but it's just the just playing all around. And he goes, I like that one. I said, there's other versions of it. And he was like, oh, I like that one. So 12-year-olds.
As we've been talking about this theme a lot, let's listen to a bit. When you hear that full version on Spotify, it's got a really, really long, slow build-up. So is that what you're talking about, this sort of ambient bit?
That the build up before the everything starts is the it's actually, I don't think it's played anywhere, is it?
I don't
No.
think it is. I think it's only on. I've not heard it in the park.
Yeah, the start is just audibly setting the scene with the twi the blossom and things like that just blowing about. Yeah, I never
Yeah.
thought of that. It's never actually played anywhere.
Well, that was a waste of time then, wasn't
But I did the same
it?
on Valhalla, to jump ahead. I did the same on Valhalla, that to get to Valhalla you're already dead. And I thought, well, hang on a minute, it mu for my concept album of Valhalla, he needs to die. So if you listen to the Valhalla score, like the first, I don't know, 3 minutes is, or whatever it is, there's a battle with all the dum dum dums in time to everything. That's not on the ride anywhere. But I was
Wow.
setting the scene that he died on the battlefield,
Yeah.
and then there's a bit where it's just a choir. That's his body kind of going up into the ether, and then the music starts. But I did all that just to, set the scene. But it's actually, yeah, it's not used, but it's the obsessive in me that, you need to tell a story, and so the story can't start halfway through.
You need Amanda to do some sort of Hot Ice and Valhalla scene,
Yes,
and she
there
could
is.
use the whole thing and then do the soldier dying and then take it. Like, she can have that idea on me,
Oh
that's
yeah,
fine.
there you go. There is a Hot Ice edit of it, but no, nobody dies in the start. Yeah, well, a single swordsman comes out, is murdered by the rest of the skaters, and then he's on the wire system, and you get, oh yeah,
It's
top
the cheery start to Hot Ice that we all need.
on death.
I can't even
No, it's really
imagine.
strange. I can't even think of a setting. It's
Okay,
so
so let's just hear how this icon theme that you've created, how that starts up.
we have wind and birds that were created on a synthesizer rather than just generic sound effects.
It's very ambient, isn't it?
You got like the little wind chimes blowing in the wind, the waves gently rumbling away, again created on synthesizers rather than just sound effects CDs.
So you literally were playing all of these little effects into
Yeah,
your computer
programming them,
every.
and
Wow.
I like to give each score its own sound universe. So the first few weeks, I might just spend, I'll turn it down a fraction. The first few weeks, I just spend making sounds, and you create like an audio universe for that kind of leads. You kind of have the melody in your head already, so then the sounds dictate the arrangements and things like that. So
That's
it's getting
amazing.
the suspense, there's something's going to happen.
At the point where you were doing this then, did you already have the main theme in your head? Did you know where
Yeah.
it was? You'd already
Yeah.
you did you kind of start with that?
Kind of, yeah. Sometimes it can take you off in a different angle. Here comes a tidal wave, which always hurts.
Yeah, you can really hear that now, can't you? Now that we know what it is as well, it's so nice to have like heard the backstory as to Amanda's thinking behind it.
Yeah. So there'd be the ground opening up. Oh,
And so there's a little rumble of a monster, like something coming out. Should be somewhere there. There he is. And then we go into the lodge.
So the idea at this point is it's the launch of the coaster as well.
Yeah, they got into what everybody knows. The launch was an added thing that when the ride was being built, it was worked out that there would be a gap, and I think I suggested it. If I didn't, I don't take credit for it. But to put a sting on it, and then the ride goes on when the voice of Icon says Icon, and so that's the only recorded human speaking on the whole ride, apart from the ride announcements and things like that. But that on the score, that's my friend Claire, who was roped in to do it. And this was her first voiceover gig, and she's actually on Valhalla, because I said, you've got to be on Valhalla as well. Her brief was disinterested sexy.
We can all get on board with.
I wanted her to have this calmness, but at the same time not sound bored. So I said, you've got to sex it up a bit. Love, come on, you know, let's sex it up a bit. But it's actually, if I go to where she is, where
that's
are you?
Amazing. I love that it's just a friend of yours. It's not like a sort of professional.
Everybody gets roped in.
I'd love to do that. Like to have me in a song, that would be great. I'd love that. So Glenn, if you ever need anyone from Essex, then
you need a male to do disinterested sexy.
Yeah.
So her voice, I recorded her. I told you that three times. So the first one is just
Icon,
and then there's a kind of chorusing on it. The second one, I think, has a vocoder on it just to make it sound different.
Icon.
Like that. And then there's the third one here.
Icon.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you put all three together and you get
Icon.
That's so cool. I love the layering of the sound. That is so smart.
This is what you do as an artist. You can kind of think, I'm going to need some layers to that. Me, I'd just be like, I just need someone to say Icon and stick it on there. Like, yeah. I don't know how you even, you know, your thought process of, well, I need a layer that does this and I need a layer that does that. And then together they're going to create this sandwich, which sounds really good. Like, who teaches you that?
It's listening to pop records when you're a kid and things like that. That's and the 20 odd years I've been doing it. It's a voice on its own, 9 out of 10 times sounds awful. And really weak. You can have the best singers in the world and it can sound weak as anything. So you have to compress it and put a verb on it and usually chorus it as well. But the best vocals are always layered. Most songs you hear, it's very, very, very rare that it's the vocal on its own just done once. You always chorus one down, you pitch one up, pitch one down, chorus it. So it just gives that warmed to the voice.
Wow.
And obviously we hear it and we take that Icon for granted, and it is quite iconic for us as enthusiasts, because obviously you hear that Icon every time you launch. Yes. And it is there, it's played around you, but you don't think about the work that's gone into just creating that one second
that
bit
one
of audio
word, yeah.
It's
what everybody remembers. To kind of lead up to it, she's flanged backwards. You record
Poor Claire.
You play it backwards with a massive reverb on it. So you go.
Icon.
Wow.
So it just feeds into it. It kind of prepares the ear that something's coming.
So clever. And again, like I said, we just don't think about it. We kind of take it for granted. As you get into that main bit then, the bit that you say we all know, it's kind of the bit that's played in the station a lot, that iconic Icon theme. Can you tell us a little bit about your process of obviously coming up with that based on Amanda's brief and then those layers that are in that music that we hear?
The melody, it seems to take forever to come up with. It longer than usual. But I knew the hardest thing in the world is for it to get out of my head and down my arm and out of my fingers. You always hear it in your head, but when you play it, you think, "Oh, that's not right. That's not right." And so, yeah, I wanted a driving bass, so that's why it's got that really quick sequenced bass. But I wanted the melody to be quite calm, but with everything all hell breaking loose around it. So I wanted it to start quite quietly, almost, and just keep building. But yeah, this melody took forever. Things to remember, but then again, I still do it now. So the drum track, there's a little like ha 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 kind of noise that pans left and right, which you don't hear in the stage. But it's a bonus for people who listen to it on headphones and things like that. We listen to it on Spotify or whatever. It's a bonus for them that it is in stereo.
And you've got those drums. Are they because you had this kind of Japanese kind of theory from Amanda? Was that supposed to be a bit of like a warrior?
It's almost, there's, especially when I'm doing Hot Ice, but and I'm doing this, there's almost a default requirement that it has the Takedo or whatever called Japanese drums. That, and especially when I'm doing Hot Ice, big end. It's got to have a big end. And that they are always the two absolute mandatory things that I get told. But they do suit this because it's Japanese. And
those drums, they're not actually drums. They are just you on a keyboard, even though they sound like a Japanese warrior going into battle.
They are samples of different drums, but yeah, you got to do the rhythm. So if you're doing it in step time, where you just put a little dot in on a drum map on the computer, you don't get a kind of free rhythm. It sounds very robotic. So I always prefer to tap it out, and if I need to quantize it, so I've got to stay in time but still have a bit of looseness. So you'll program it out, and then if you've drifted off after four bars or whatever, you can just move them afterwards. But you're moving everything as a group, so it's everything stays kind of that loose feeling rather than sounding robotic, which is always the downfall of if you're doing a dance track. Yeah, you want that bang on quantized sound, but if you're doing something like that and it's meant to be recreating live percussionists or drummers, then they don't do it perfectly, so you've got to humanize it a bit.
Well, yeah, and now you've said it, obviously I'm gonna forever imagine you playing on the keyboard and the drum. But before that point, I definitely, you know, as far as I'm concerned, when I hear it, I am watching a warrior bashing a massive drum. You really do get that feel, so it definitely worked. And then you mentioned the big end that Amanda likes. So obviously when we hear the full version on Spotify, that kind of doesn't, that goes back to where you started from, doesn't it? It has a bit of an ambient end, that's
me being, there is a big end, yes. And then it, to me, it just in Hot Ice, yeah, because it's the hold at the end, so there is a big end, but it builds and builds and builds, and then there is a kind of big end. And it goes It goes into that because originally it goes into like that ambient thing, which is one of my favourite bits. because just so if it was when I did it naively as one piece at the start, when I started recording it, thinking it was just going to be played as a loop endlessly, it's just so it as it it kind of calms back down, so there's no hard loop point. It's also a salute to Jean-Michel Jarre. Sometimes he does a big end, and then there's like a, you think the song's ended, and then there's like a meandering bit afterwards. Anyway, so it was just me living out my Jean-Michel Jarre fantasies.
I love that. that ending as well, which it is iconic to us as fans of the ride. You've got loads going on in there. So you've got those drums, you've got strings, you've got a choir effect going on. It, was that you just like, I just need more. I need to layer more and more stuff into this.
Throw everything at it, throw absolutely everything at it. The choir is... Everybody's always surprised to find out the choir is real.
Oh, really?
I wanted to use a young choir, like kids and teenagers. The local town where I live has a church choir, kids church choir, and so I got hold of the choir master and explained, and he was like, go on then, okay. And it was a bit, what the hell's going on? The kids were all into it. So there was probably about 30 of them, and he rehearsed them like you would not believe. That absolutely, they were not perfect. We recorded it on a Friday night in like the church hall or whatever. It had really nice acoustics, actually. 6 or 8 microphones scattered around everywhere, and 2 on the main recording microphones. And they were so excited because it was a kid, you know, absolute target demographic of kids to record for a roller coaster. And they were so chuffed that they were going to be on a roller coaster. And they actually were going to go to Blackpool as the part of the church's thing is they go to a different church every year. It's like a summer camp kind of thing. And they go all around Europe. It's a completely unbeknownst to me, but it's quite a thing for Catholic choirs to go and stay with other kids, and then they come here, and it's like a kind of school exchange thing. And they couldn't find a church in the Northwest that would put them up, so they couldn't as a group. Hello, it's like, oh, come on, somebody. And they were so excited about doing it. They were going to have, and I told Robert Owen, who was head of PR at the time at the Pleasure Beach, and he's going, oh yeah, this would be cool. We'll get, you know, a big picture with them and everything else. It'll be really, you know, just really nice for them, for the, like a memory of it. But yeah, un-Christian-like local local churches, nobody put them up. It's not a thing in England.
Oh,
I know. Poor.
That's not very Christian.
No, I know. That's what I thought.
did they ever get to go afterwards? Do you know?
No, I don't. I still know one of them. He's a policeman now. That's how old. it's a mate of 15 to 22 or whatever he is now. That's, you can do a lot between 15 and 22.
Yeah.
You can be a little kid, and then all of a sudden you're now a Polizei man. So I still see him. No, I don't think they've ever been, which is a shame, because they were so excited, and I made a donation to the church, and I said, you've got to get the kids something, and he said, oh well, it's whatever it was, the second Friday in the month is pizza movie night, All right. So I said, so, right, I'll buy the pizzas then, thinking it's not going to cost me a lot of money. God, they went to town. They were really topping them. And I think they usually have one between two. They were all having their own.
I can't blame them for that.
No, no. The choir master, he worked them hard. The harder the choir works, the less work there is for me. So I quite like him for that.
It's such a cool story, although a bit of a sad ending for them. But
I know.
They've got part of something amazing.
Yeah, they don't throw rotten fruit at me in the street or anything when they see me. So, you know, it's amazing. Yeah, again, they were kids and a number of years ago, and every now and again, a 6'4" kid comes up to me, man comes up to me and goes, Eric, I was on your choir. I was like, oh, okay. I was the little one at the front. I was like, Jesus.
How does it feel for you to go to the rides and listen to it in situ? Because obviously you mentioned that like the speakers are mono and stuff like that, and you don't get the stereo separation. So do you find that exciting, or are you just like, oh, it doesn't sound as good as it could do? Or
around Icon, if we stick to Icon, I remember going a few days before the grand opening, and it was playing. They were testing everything, it was playing, and I was genuinely really quite proud. I think it sounds around when it comes down from the first drop, and in that kind of slaty area with the red posts, and there's lots of speakers around there. I think it sounds quite good actually. You can hear it a good distance away. It's played proper loud, so I like that. And I remember going into the station for the first ride with Mans and people from Mac and you know the VIPs or whatever you want to call it, and when I was in the station, and she had it on 11 that day, she really did. There was a bass tone that was really resonating, so as soon as I got home, I redid that. It sounded fine on my system and headphones and everything else, but just the size of the room and resonance, it was resonating against something in there, so I kind of made a note on my phone and recorded it, so I knew where it was, and then I changed that as soon as I got back, and then they just loaded it into the system. But yeah, it was loud that day, and I felt really, yeah, I felt good about myself that day.
So you should. What was Amanda's reaction when you played it to her?
Oh, she loved it. Yeah, it was no changes, nothing. She loved it straight out of the box. More than she was thinking I was going to do. Yeah, absolutely. It's the edited version stayed in Hot Ice for years and years and years. So that's always a good barometer of how well you're doing, whether one of the scores stays in Hot Ice.
Yeah, definitely. It was quite it was a bit of a first for the Pleasure Beach as well, really, to kind of have this level of theming and detail. Like, ride soundtracks weren't something that they'd done before. And is that then how the Big One soundtrack came about? Because you did the soundtrack for the Big One. The Big One had existed since 1994 with no soundtrack, really.
Yeah. Yeah, it was coming up for its 25th anniversary, and because Icon was drowning everything out around there, it kind of made the park start sounding empty in other places. So because it was coming up for its 25th, yeah, it was an easy fix, and it lifted the ride and gave some sound around that area. But it was a unique opportunity because the ride was already there. And so I wanted to, there's certain iconic sounds on the Big One that everybody knows, like at the lift hill, that weird siren that goes off in the station and things like that. So very early one Saturday morning with my assistant, as I'm going to call him, Tom, who's head of technical for Stage Works, but he was my assistant. And the had boom mics and digital recorders, and just wandered around the ride while it was being tested, sticking the microphone right underneath the lift hill, in the station for the
all
radios.
The glamorous jobs.
And it was pouring down.
Of course it was.
Yeah. And so Tom was volunteered to go on the ride with actually this digital recorder, which was I managed to put it in a carrier bag, so like a plastic thing, because I didn't want it getting completely soaked wet. And we gaffer taped it to his hand, like miles and miles of gaffer tape, so there was no way it would fly out and break it. More importantly, not injure anybody, but break that. And so he got in the front of the car, and the ride engineers were like, "It's dodgy. It's touching the maximum wind speed." And he sat in the car for about 15 minutes, and they kept saying, "It might drop. It might drop." And then it never did. So, because I wanted that kind of noise on the ride as well to put in at various points, but yeah, it was just an extra thing that we never managed to do. But all the audio, the brakes and the air brakes and the gates and all that kind of thing. Luckily, the brakes were very squeaky that day because it was cold and wet and there was nobody there. So the air gates were on it squeaking away and things like that. So I wanted to give it, yeah, I wanted to make the sound of, it's a very rare opportunity to make a song, make a song or whatever you want to call it for a ride that's already there. And it's such an iconic thing that everybody knows, and it has these weird noises that people remember. But I also wanted to make it sound like the song had already always been there, so that's why it has a kind of 90s semi feel about it, because I wanted to give the feel that this song had already always been
there,
right?
Yeah, and it definitely does have that 90s feel. Whose idea was it to put in the little nods, so it was sort of like conceived by Geoffrey Thompson and all of that kind of stuff?
There was a require. Well, man said something about do stats in it,
right,
kind of thing. So I did the height thing and asked various people just pick a number between 0 and 235. So that's why the numbers are just random numbers, because it's just people. I just ask people to pick a number. So there's no people have tried to work out if there's a formula. Oh, six. Six is definitely. I chose six because it's the prisoner, from the TV show. And then everybody else chose numbers. It's amazing how many people chose 235. Here's another one. And then there's the unofficial height or official height, depending on who you ask. So that's
well, yeah. it's a controversy amongst enthusiasts.
Yeah. So I thought I'd put that in, or else you lot are good mad. always an eye on what you lot will think. And then
you sound like Amanda.
And so I did that, and then she asked if the bit about Geoffrey and aerodynamics and things like that could go in as well. So that's why it's at the that's why they got added.
It's cool though. It definitely adds something to it. I can't think of another soundtrack that I've heard which has got that kind of those little nods in it. There's even the Experience Vertical Reality, which is what was used when the big one was first opened. That was its kind of tagline, was Vertical Reality, which seems crazy to us now because obviously it was never a vertical roller coaster, and a few years later. But it's nice that it's in there, especially for us as nerds. I think the general public probably don't even notice or even really care. But for us, it's like, this is, a ride that, whilst not all enthusiasts rate it, I'm actually a big fan of it because of what it represents and what it represented at the time. And I think to have those little nods in it as an enthusiast, it's like, it kind of belongs to us in that way.
I mean, I remember it being opened because I'm I was only a toddler, but I
We
remember
all
being at
were.
the with a big stage on the promenade and things like that. And it took me. I'm not good with height, and I've got worse. And it took. It must have been open a year before I had the balls to go on it, because I remember driving into Blackpool. Well, it was just the winter. It really got put up and assembled, and driving from like the Lytham end, so you're coming along the prom, and it's just the biggest thing in the world. It was just, I remember seeing it first time, thinking I have never seen anything like that in my life,
No.
and I'm not good with heights, and since. I met my wife, who's terrified of heights. It's got worse. She's infected me, and so I'm all right. Once it's dropped, I'm fine. It's that climb. I can't. I probably did it 2 or 3 years ago, and I'm not doing it again. I'm not doing it again. It's. I don't know what it is. Probably it's the old memory of it being so. Looking so high and everything else that it kind of cemented it. If it was a launch coaster and it did that, so if you had the world's longest launch and then it did that, then I would be absolutely fine. It's just the slowness of it and the climb and everything else. And people who do the walk the big one really need the head scene to. I
I
just.
can appreciate that, Glenn. I'm not a fan of a lift hill either. I hate lift hills. I hate going up. I don't like heights. I love roller coasters, but yeah, a lift hill, not a big fan. And this, yeah, same. I see people walking the big one. I'm like, you are crazy. That is not my idea of a good day out.
We were going to record the ride as it came past at the bottom of that lift hill. There is a gantry, like an inspection gantry, and we were going to stick the microphone there as it came past, but because it was closed for the rest of the day, that it we never got to record that, but. Yeah, even stood there. No, it gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Can you play us a little bit of it?
Give me all kinds of boredom. The opening ambient sound is when we were stood at the bottom of the lift hill, waiting for him to start it. I was moving my microphone around, trying to find the best place to do it, and there was the control box for the wheel for the lift hill, and as my microphone kept going near it, it was picking up like an electrical interference, and you move the microphone away and it wouldn't do it. And then I recorded that, so that's this noise, which is at the start, but it's just the electrical motor interference.
Wow, that's so cool.
And then there's radios that the engineers were using. Oh, the air gates. With all the reverb on it. I was just recording general ambience, and they were making a noise. The famous siren, which was really hard to record because it was so loud. Every time I did it, it peaked the recording. So then you get the collage of this.
Jeffrey Thompson, OBE. Built by Aerodynamics.
So that bit is when the ride is running. It comes into the station and kind of stops and then kind of trundles forward. Again, it's kind of it tells a story. So it's coming into the station, all the atmosphere, the climb, and then the drop. And then I wanted to make it sound after the first drop. I wanted to make it kind of relentless because the rides you kind of don't get a rest after the first drop until quite late in the ride. So I wanted to give it that relentless feel and. To me, it feels like a heavy ride. The train and everything else, it feels like it's a juggernaut rather than sports car. So I wanted, that's why it's got that really heavy bass and everything else, just to give it some weight as it goes through the song.
So as you're kind of going up that lift hill, you do start to get a bit of that, the melody coming through in the dun 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 starts.
Yes, because it
Is
just
that sort of meant to be like the lift hill, like that anticipation of going up the lift hill? And like you say, you're nervous of it, I'm nervous of it, a lot of us are nervous of it, and you're really building that tension, I suppose, with those
yeah.
effects that you've put on.
There was a kind of back of the fag packet calculation if we could do it, so the speakers were doing it up the hill, but it becomes a sinking issue and a cost issue and everything else, and it didn't really need it, but it was one of those, oh, should we do this kind of things? But it was quickly it was quickly decided it'd be a bad idea. So I did record the lift hill, and again I've looped it, and that provides four bars of just the loop of the lift hill, and then there's bits that I'd sampled separately on the day. Made a loop over the top of it. All the lift hill, it's all the sound of the lift hill. Yeah, so when it's climbing.
100, 101.
101 is because there's a Depeche Mode album called 101.
That's a nice Easter egg.
If there's a 55, there's a reason for that as well.
Six.
Yeah, there is. 55 is a TV commercial I did years and years and years and years and years ago. And there was, it was an ambient thing, and there was this very good looking guy on a beach, and it was like really minimal, and it just goes 55, and that was it. And
Oh, what
that
was
was
that
the
for?
entire. It's either alcohol or aftershave.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
I can't
that
remember
makes
which one it
sense.
was. But it was just this really calm 55, and you used to get people just going 55, because it became like a tick, and people would just, it almost like, when people sing along to melodies of to lyrics of songs, people just randomly go 55, and it became like a weird thing. So that's in it just because 55.
75.
75 is the year of my birth. I'm now realizing that I didn't give people many options to how many numbers they could choose.
100, 101, 136, 172. 189, 200, 213, 235.
Now, the usual thing there, if you're doing a 90s inspired dance song, would be to build, 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 and then go berserk. Because you're building, building, building. But when my memories of the ride are, especially if you sat at the front, you go over the front. And it seems like an eternity for the rest of the ride to get over the top. And so you're kind of held in this like suspended state, and it freaks the living daylights out of me. I don't like it, but and it's almost like to me, it's like a free fall. You're just held, and then you start to go. There's not a, it's, to me, it's not a continuous movement over the top, especially if you're sat at the front. There's like a waiting time. So that's why I wanted to give it this kind of held and then start.
Miles per hour.
then the momentum starts and off we go.
I love it. I love how it builds. And then, yeah, you really kind of capture, I think, that anticipation that you get going up the big one and then experiencing it. I think you did really well. And to say that it wasn't part of the original ride and it now is, and it now feels weird for it not to be there, I think you did an amazing job with that. Glenn, it's been absolutely fascinating to talk to you today. I know that Kip's going to feel the same as well. For us as enthusiasts, to just kind of get this insight into everything that goes on to add to these attractions that we know and love. It's absolutely crazy, the work that you put into it. And to hear some of these stories as well about how these things have come about and the level of detail that you've gone into to capture these rides it's amazing. And you've worked on Valhalla as well. We haven't got even time to go into that today. So we've got to get you back and we've got to do a full discussion on Valhalla because, again, another iconic attraction. And I know there's so much that's gone into that soundtrack, which warrants its own episode.
Yeah, it's a massive, nearly 400 channels of audio going through it. Yeah, it's a massive, massive undertaking and on the computer.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, that's just crazy. A mind-boggling amount of work to go into creating something for us all to enjoy. I'm sure you're really busy as well with all your other work and you've got loads of other exciting project plans. Have you got any more theme park work in the pipeline, or are you just concentrating on your other stuff at the moment?
There's Hot Ice for this year, which I've got to do, and there's something.
Oh, that feels like a tease.
There's two things. One I think everybody knows about. I think everybody knows about both of them, but I'm not saying.
is one of them to do with being thrust faster than ever before?
In what direction?
The new launch pad, which was Ice Blast, which was PlayStation.
That's the girl.
You're doing that one?
Yes, I started it.
That's great to know. That's going to have a soundtrack.
It's cool. It's already, I started it yesterday, and it's very. I instantly when Mam said to me just before Christmas, and I went, I have the idea. Yeah, I've got it, and yeah. So it's not going to be as because you're not in the queue long very long. So it's not going to be 30 minutes long. But I say that now, and then it'll end up being longer because I can just keep throwing stuff at it. But yeah, there's that.
And something else. What could it be?
Dot.
Is it a Stratacoaster out on its own pier into the sea?
Oh, well, you're going to have to sign the NDA as well now.
It's that Blackpool rumour that just will not go away.
That was a rumour when my wife worked there 20 years ago.
We did the whole episode about rumours, and that's the rumour that I always remember as an enthusiast. Where is it? Why has it not been built? Is this what you're working on next? We're going to have to wait and see. Fascinating. Absolutely loved having you on. Thank you so much for sharing your stories with us, and we really look forward to chatting to you again and seeing what you come up with. And now I'm looking forward to the launch pad theme, which I'm sure is going to be nice and space inspired and futuristic.
Oh, yeah. It's like Vangelis never died.
You're just living out all your pop icon dreams, aren't you?
As Mum said to me, she goes, "This is perfect for you. I want it all spacey and simple."
Brilliant. Glenn Robertson, the Notable Stranger, thank you so much for coming on to Parkcast with us. And thank you also, Kip, for joining me today, keeping me company with...
You're very welcome.
Kev not being here. He will probably emerge next week from a sea of boxes like some sort of Adonis. But we'll have to see if he's made it out in time. And Kip's channel, you can, of course, follow. We talked all about him before Christmas, but just search Kip Hakes. You'll find out all his blogs, and he's usually fixing something or on a theme park ride going backwards with his very fancy Ray-Ban. What are these glasses that you've got that record video?
Yeah, the Ray-Ban Meta glasses. They are absolutely incredible. I love that. So
you get some on-ride, cheeky on-ride POVs where there's no recording allowed on with them, don't you?
Yeah. I'm looking forward to taking those to New York with me and doing some stuff in and around New York and on the plane. And it's just really cool, having a different angle to record from.
Amazing. Well, yes, enjoy New York. Glenn, enjoy your birthday for the rest of the day. And for now, we've been Parkcast. We'll be back next week. If you have enjoyed today's episode, please do give us a little like and a subscribe so that you get a notification whenever we release a new episode.
Parkcast. The UK's original theme park podcast.